I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 548. Nothing bad has happened.
But it's gonna.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming to gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, it's been a good week. You know, I could complain, but I'd be stretching.
I would be nitpicking to an extent that I don't even nitpick, and I mean, I'm anal, retentive as get out about shit.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know you be retaining in the anus, but no, I got nothing to complain about this week. It's been a good week. The sun is shining. I got a promotion at my day job.
Woo!
We had a great time at a family function this week.
Woo-woo!
We started our stuff, you know. We got a bunch of good things happening this month, game-wise. Like, I can't really complain.
I'm not complaining.
You know, Boston Comic Con's about to jump off here in our area. We're not going, but it's about to pop off. Press registration opened up for BFIG, the Boston Festival of Indie Games. We will be going. We love going to BFIG. It's just nice just getting to spend the afternoon talking with people, up and coming, as well as established people about their games, check out some new stuff that's happening, play around in tabletop. It's just a nice chill show with some really creative people. So we will be doing BFIG again this year.
I really appreciate the format that BFIG has. And I understand that the format's not necessarily different from like a PAX. I mean, PAX is just a bigger scale and bigger volume, which means more.
Yeah, it's just like a thousand times more.
But I mean, there's something about, like, it feels smaller and intimate. Like, you're going to see, like, a one-man show, kind of, and then you get backstage access. Like, you feel more connected to who you are, you know, talking to and the content that you're getting. And you get, I think, a level deeper with these developers because, you know, some of them are kind of up and coming or some have already been established and this is their, like, next title where you can establish that rapport from the ground up. Where, mm-hmm. you know, coming into this industry, like, we had to grind to get what we got. But, like, if we start here, then even when they get up to that level, like, Esh is in the foundation. They've been with us since, you know, the first game, and they've believed in us ever since. So, like,
it's all just about making good relationships, right?
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing and the thing that we enjoy the most whenever we go out to shows is being able to make a connection with people about games. That's what we're all about, is connecting with people about games. Even if the game that they're showing, sharing, they've made or whatever, isn't necessarily one of our independent favorite types of games to play, it's still cool to talk with people about their passion. You know, it's just like when you make a great meal for somebody and then you watch them enjoy it, you get joy out of their enjoyment of the thing that you made, that you put together with your hands. And so whenever we can talk with somebody about this thing that was their baby, their passion, the thing that they crafted, you know, that's really cool. And it's hard to do that at a PAX East because everything happens on the show floor and it's so big and it's so loud that it's really hard to try and have a real intimate conversation.
Like, well, you've got all these passion projects that all have that humble beginning of, you know, five or six people saying, we can do X, let's do that, and then it blowing up. And, like, it's very much like Fame, I think. And granted, I'm not famous, I'm not a celebrity, but I imagine
not at all.
I mean, some people know me. Like, I still have some people who
you were doing so well at being humble.
Sit down, be humble. And like, Like, I have some, like, some. Like, I'm not, there aren't droves of people, but when people figure out who I am, like, the light goes on and they're like, oh, shit, I've been listening to you since, like, the fifth episode of Kingdom Hearts, the remake. and I'm like, oh, man, you've really been there through it all, because those episodes were shit. I'll be the first one to tell you. I was phoning it in. But,
oh, God, were you ever phoning it in?
I know.
I was so mad.
I was so mad. Young and dumb. Young and dumb is what I'm going to attribute it to.
All right.
I said, I'm just a little bit older now. I'm less phoning it in and more just sheer tired because I'm just old and my back doesn't have energy no more. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm not like Kim K celebrity status.
Right.
Like, I can't take a picture of a half empty, like, Ruffles bag. And people will be like, oh my God, she's not cunchy yet. Like, people will not come after me for littering. I don't have to worry about that because my celebrity is more on the smaller side, which I happen to like. Because I think if I had a lot of celebrityism, not that that's a word, I would definitely be an asshole. Like, I'll be the first one to tell you. The minute I get that rich Kool-Aid, you will not be able to tolerate how annoying I will be until all of a sudden I get brought back down. You know me.
I'll bring you down, girl. I got you.
It's like, I get those high-class chicken and waffles because I'm a classy bitch. Like, come on.
I would do it. It's still chicken and waffles. Get your ass down here on this ground.
I bought a Roscoe's.
But, like, it is one of the real enjoyments that I have for shows that we go to. B-Fig is high up on my list because, you know, to your point, it is a much more intimate event. Yeah. Even though it keeps growing, like, it's huge now compared to, like, the first time that we went, the first B-Fig that we went to, you know, and we were invited by Alicia Pasoli over at Disruptor Beam, and she was like, you should definitely come to the show. I'm doing the show at MIT, and I really think that it'd be, like, up you guys' alley. And so,
I mean, it's taken off since then because now what?
Yeah.
We've got our B-Fig here. Connecticut has their own.
Connecticut has their own festival of indie games.
Like, it is, I think it's going to be a growing.
There's talk about expansion again and then bringing another one on board, I think, a little bit further south.
I think that would be great. Because
it would be fantastic.
I really believe that this format, for one, in an industry that is dealing with a clientele or demographic that is highly jaded, overly we criticize way too much, like we nitpick the smallest things, we bitch about everything, you know, and we're expecting these companies to reinvent the wheel every game when we really shouldn't, because that is a hard thing to ask anybody to do, let alone a team of like thousands or, you know, couple of hundred. But like this is a good way to bring in fresh blood to these already established, you know, development houses, and or give smaller houses a chance to grow and be a bigger contender in that, you know, AAA-ish, if that's even if they want, the indie a bit.
I think, and we've seen this, that the indie game development ecosystem positively affects the rest of the gaming ecosystem, right? Like, in all honesty, most of the innovation that's happening right now in the games industry is coming from, was started by, or inspired by something that was happening on the indie scene. And so I think it's just good for one another that you have, you know, indies to your AAAs, and indies doing as well as AAAs. A lot of people forget that Ori and the Blind Forest is technically an indie game. It is not a AAA game. And, you know, we've got the sequel now coming, and that looks amazing. You know, you look at Cuphead, okay? Cuphead is an independent game, but it is AAA, and the team is already committed to doing a sequel. They want to continue doing what they're doing. That's a labor of love. You know, you look at games, you know, like studios like Proletariat that attracted a lot of people that had previously worked at AAA houses to build their own thing, and you have more and more of that popping up. You know, it's just, it's a good balance to have, and I think as long as both are respected, we're in a really good place. I wouldn't say, just let me clarify, that the entire community is jaded. I think that the loudest members of the community who have big followings on YouTube and Twitch and things like that, they are and their fans in a way because, you know, they love them. They're fans of those people for a reason. Become very similar minded. And so it's just the loudest voice that we hear more often tends to be a little bit more cynical, tends to be a little more jaded, and tends to ask for the sky and the moon when the land and the sea that we've got right now is pretty damn good. Like, right. If you look at the industry as it is right now, we've got some really interesting innovations going on. Part of the reason why I was not completely on board with the Switch when it was first announced was I was like, why would I carry around another handheld tablet, basically, that's smaller than my iPad?
I wouldn't even call it a tablet. It's more like a screen. You're carrying around like a screen.
I mean, but why would I do that? And then I got my Switch, and I played Zelda. Still haven't finished it.
Oh, it's going to take you a while. Like, that's not a hop-in, hop-out scenario.
I got to leave the Divine Beast that I'm in. Because I kept trying, even though you told me not to. And I just can't beat that fucking lightning Ganon. So I gotta go and get...
Thunderblight Ganon is a piece of work. They do not prepare you for the level of speed that thing comes at you.
Like,
they don't.
Not in the least. So I gotta leave that one and go do the lizard one. So I can get that shield protection.
Oh my god, yes. Get Baruch's protection. Fuck yes. That will make them... with Zora's, with Mipha's Grace will be a nice little booster until you can get your skills up.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna have to do on that one. So anyway, but the real game changer for me was we had a day at my day job where basically all of the C-level executives had taken the day off. So it was right before July 4th, because the 4th happened on a Tuesday this year, and we had to be in office on Monday. And in my office, it was basically just my team. Me, the two members of my team, our full intern crew, save one, so like six interns, and our junior legal counsel, because we couldn't take the day off because we had to be in office. Like, our office assistant wasn't even in the office.
Wow. When your admin's not around, you really shouldn't be there.
Yeah, because she was hourly, so she was like, suck it. So it was just us. And I was like, you know what? We have an HDMI connection in our boardroom. I'm going to bring in my Switch and Mario Kart. We'll order lunch and we'll all just work out of the boardroom and we'll have like mini competitions for Mario Kart, because who doesn't like Mario Kart? So I brought all my Joy-Cons. One of my interns brought his charging base so we could have the extra. And we had a great time. You know, people who've never played Mario Kart before, playing it for the first time versus, you know, I call her the ringer because one of my interns, she's like, oh, Mario Kart, that's one of my favorite games, but I haven't played in like years. And then we get in and she's like, and by years, I mean 4 hours ago when I was playing with my brother. And we were like, ringer. But we had a great time. And that's really when my mind completely shifted around where the Switch really wins as a console, even though I'm air quoting there, still calling it a console. Because I can't pick up my PlayStation 4 or my Xbox One that easy to take someplace to game like that. I just don't. To take my Xbox anywhere, I would need to get, one, a carrying case for it.
I got one. It's the Zelda's.
I am not putting my X1 in just a backpack. Like, that's not happening. So I would really want to have, like, a games case or something like that. That shit's heavy. Any way you slice it, that shit's heavy. Then bringing around with that extra controllers and finding a good enough game that you could do 4-player with isn't as easy. But to the commercial's point, which I used to laugh at in the Nintendo commercials, so I'm completely owning this, the Switch is mad easy to pick up and take someplace else and start a quick, fun, casual party game. And there's a lot to be said about that. There isn't anything that I can do like that on my iPad. On my phone, I've got Heads Up, but that's like really it as far as multiplayer casual fun. So the Switch wins there because of Mario Kart and ARMS and Lord knows what other multiplayer. I mean, Brawl's going to happen. We know this because Nintendo's not dumb. You know, and so there's a lot to be said for that, to be able to take the party someplace, really and truly. That is innovative. I've wanted to be able to do that a bunch of times. Can you imagine having an easy way to take an Xbox or a PlayStation someplace and the gear to set up a Rock Band party?
Oh my God.
But I don't have that.
No, actually, you gotta have, like, if you have a signature band, like, regular homies that you play with, like, you go to the drummer's house because everybody else can carry
their shit. Yeah, you always shit. Gotta go to the, you gotta go,
you gotta go to the drummer's house. The drummer has the worst setup. So it's like, oh, I'm going to Liz's house, bring him my bass. And, like, that's it. Like, it's, you gotta go to the drummer's house. So, I mean, it's fairly simple if you think about it. But if you're the drummer, you're like, I'm not carrying it. So you come to me or I don't play.
So. Right. So you got that.
That.
Then you start looking at, you know, other things that are happening. Like, you know, we haven't talked about it a bunch, but Harmonix has been working actually on a tabletop game.
Oh.
Have you seen Drop Mix?
No.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm struggling so hard with understanding this. So they announced Drop Mix at PAX East. We were there. Okay, but what Drop Mix is, yeah, so what Drop Mix is it is a tabletop game. It has you plug in your phone or a tablet to be the screen, I believe. I can't remember because we didn't actually see it. Okay, and what it is it's a card-based game. And all the cards basically are laid out on this track that's color-coded. So you can only place blue cards in the blue area. You have a wild card area that can be purple or a yellow card. And then you have these spots for purple and yellow cards. And those are different types of segments of a song. So one might be a beat, one might be a vocal, whatever. And basically you are in a war to remix a song. So you drop a card to change the mix. Drop Mix.
Oh, that's really effing cool.
Yeah. Hardly anybody is talking about Drop Mix. Like, every once in a while, I see a new video that they put out of someplace that they've gone. They took it to South by Southwest. Like, and I'm just like, how is nobody talking about this game? Because that is a great mixture of tech and tabletop. Okay, and it's not like you're playing the music. You're merely working the cards that you have to try and make the most interesting mix. And as you make interesting mixes, different things happen on the screen. And I'm just like, how is nobody talking about this game?
That's really neat. Yeah. Well, I'm like upset that I didn't catch any whiff of that.
Yeah, you really need to check it out because we need to play Drop Mix. Like, we need to have a Drop Mix night at your house.
Like, yeah.
You know, definitely. I don't think it's out for sale yet. They're still touring around with it, but
because they're probably still trying to test out what the potential kinks for that type of setup is going to be.
Exactly. You know, making sure that, you know, the reader always reads cards well. How much play can you get on a card before maybe it doesn't read anymore? Like, there's things that you got to do, but I think that it's such an interesting mix of current gen and old gen. You know, for me, that's the perfect mix.
That's like old school meets new school, you know what I'm saying?
You know, and I mean, think of all the things that are coming with augmented reality. You know, some of the stuff that Apple showed off, that they've been working with, you know, Unreal Engine.
I mean, the mobile market, I think, is the best place for augmented reality. Like, it is, and mobile, like, I don't think we should
DS's, your tablets, you know. Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm looking at that and going, you know, when I was playing D&D as a kid, these are the ways that I used to envision what my dungeons looked like.
Oh my God, could you imagine now if they did Dungeons & Dragons in augmented reality?
Right!
Like, you had, like, a giant screen that showed you, like, the layout of the map?
Right, like, your dungeon master could craft this thing and then roll out on your augmented reality table and everybody get on the tablets and be able to see what's happening. Like, could you imagine
Wish we had the money to copyright that shit. Not that we have the technical prowess to make that happen, but that'd be
really
possible.
Coming. It's coming. And so you look at, you know, taking a console someplace that's, you know, fairly powerful enough to still be fun and easily accessible and travel easy. Then you've got the mixture of tabletop and tech together to make new games that are music and rhythm based. That, again, that are casual, fun, got a little bit of competitiveness to them, but not a lot. And then you continue to move on into, you know, all the things that are happening with VR right now and accessibility in games for other people. You know, there are so many companies now that are working on creating controllers that are better tuned for, you know, people that can only play single-handed or people that have, you know, motion issues in their hand or even weakness. You know, there are so many things that are happening right now across the spectrum to bring more inclusivity, more accessibility, more fun, and more innovation across the whole scope. It's awesome. It really is awesome to see and be a part of. So I am really challenging myself these days to focus more on the positive than the few jaded noises off to the side, to the left. You know, the hoteps in the back, as I like to call them.
If innovation was easily achieved, it wouldn't be called innovation. It wouldn't be new. It wouldn't be expansing. It would be nothing. So,
but as I was thinking about DropMix, that made me think, well, shit, what games are coming out this month? Because I, in all honesty, typically after E3, we go into a lull because there isn't typically a whole lot of new news
that unless a controversy happens. Someone says something about minorities or women, or like, we kind of tune out because we do try to stay away from, you know, highly sensitive or topical things here. Like, we try to keep it as, you know,
I try to stay out of the controversy. We try to stay away from
the drama.
Just the nonsense. Yeah, this is a no drama zone. But not so much the drama stuff. It's just that after E3, pretty much until holiday, not a lot of people release games in the doldrums because it's the middle of summer. And most people are trying to stack cash for the things that they heard about in E3 that were coming in holiday.
Well, I mean, we do see some new announcements come out of PAX at like the end of August into September. But then we go into that lull between September and, you know, holiday because they've already made the announcements from E3,
well,
like you said.
We're not in a lull. We're writing and reviewing shit.
No, but I'm just saying the industry itself, at this point, if they're developing anything new, they're not going to release any news about it.
Right. So there's no news happening. They withdraw
and hold their cards while we're like, what else can we talk about now before all the big shit happens? Like,
hey, what anime haven't we been paying attention to this whole season? Let's go back there.
Exactly.
But yeah, typically, you know, the news cycle for us is very, very light between July, August, and really the beginning of September. Things tend to pick back up in September. But it made me think, I'm like, no, I know that there are games that are actually supposed to be coming out in August. What are they? Because I completely forgot. Completely forgot. You know, typically we go in at the beginning of every quarter and we pull a big list from all of our resources, releases that we have, calendars that we have, and go, okay, what's coming out? And we figure out what it is between all of us that we want to cover, that sits in our wheelhouses, that we're really excited about, or, you know, I try to pick one or two challenge pieces that are things that are outside of my wheelhouse to do something different, right? And I didn't have anything for August. And I was like, I went back to my calendar and I was like, no, I should be doing something, right?
There's gotta be something.
And I didn't have anything like selected for August at all. And I was like, all right, let me take it back. Let me take a step back here because there's gotta be stuff. And so I went to one of my main resources that lists pretty much every game release that is coming out on all platforms. 3DS all the way through X1, including Linux, Mac, PC, you name it. And I pulled the list, and there's like over 100 games. And then I started looking, and I'm like, well, it's not really over 100 games because most of these are released on multiple platforms, so they're listed for each platform that they're in. So I cleaned up the list, but then I started looking and I'm like, you know, there are games on here that I should be pumped about, or I should be talking about, or we should have been talking about, and I don't know why we didn't. So as an example, back in 2015, Panda, remember the E3 that we saw the Ninja Theory game? And when I say the Ninja Theory game, I'm going to refresh your memory.
Are you talking about the one that we thought was like the predecessor to Heavenly Sword?
Yes. Hellblade?
Oh, is that what its name is?
Yeah, it comes out this week.
What?
Yes!
Wow, that like, you know what's funny? Because like,
it comes out August 8th.
That is really scary because I swear, like last week I saw something like the successor to Heavenly Sword is coming out soon. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yes.
I recall people talking a little bit of Man, that's some dedication because I totally forgot. Because you were all about when Twin Twang or Ying Yang, or whatever her name was.
Twang is the horrible game that you had to play.
Twing Twang.
I think it was Twang Twang.
Reevaluate your name.
Right. So let's take all the steps back, right?
Yeah.
So Heavenly Sword was a really, really fantastically presented game. Okay, and guys, I'm very particular about my wording. So it was a fantastically presented game.
It was a plump hot dog of success.
It was not a great game, but it had potential to be a great
game. It wasn't a pearl, but it was like a decent Hebrew National in the way of hot dogs.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was a good Hebrew National, but it's not a pearl.
Yeah, it was a...
If you can't tell, I'm fucking hungry.
but legit, like, it was a really good game. The lead character, Naruko, was basically, at the time the game came out, they were like, you have the god of war, and, like, she would be the goddess of war. She moved fast, she was badass, she had this shape-shifting sword, and she also was on a revenge mission for what this horrible, horrible douche did.
Did someone make her kill her family, too?
No, they killed her family.
That's really sucky.
And really...
But at least they made her mental torment one-dimensional. It wasn't like, oh man, my hands are what killed my family.
And so she took the Heavenly Sword, and most people were like, we don't actually believe that she should be the one wielding it, and it's gonna kill her, so she, like, should stop. And she's like, no, because I'm gonna wield this sword, and I'm gonna get these douche nozzles back for everything that they've done, and I'm gonna punish them. And
so she's the punisher, but, like, in...
Basically, yeah. And when you finish the game, you do, in fact, get your revenge and wipe out the evil. And it does, in fact, eat your life. Like, she goes Super Saiyan and it kills her. And then the villagers are like, oh man, we kind of suck. Look what she did. Maybe we should have said no. Maybe we shouldn't have been a douche to her before, you know, she died.
Like, look at all the good she did, and we couldn't have been like, thank you?
Different from all of us.
Right.
We put her on this raft and sent her body down the river.
We couldn't even give her an edible arrangement. Clearly she's dying.
I mean, we made these lanterns as our bad.
Whoops.
We sent your body down the river because you died saving us. Thank you so much.
I'm saying that if anything ever happens in this universe where I am the only thing that can save the world and I have to sacrifice to myself, I better have a month dedicated to me. We can make that July, make that super easy. There better be a cheese day in the celebration month of my sacrifice where everybody should buy cheese and, like, put it at my grave because some people are lactose intolerant, can't eat cheese. But if you can, you should have fondue in my name. Put fondue on it.
Anyway, like, we're not going to put no fondue on your name.
Wow, I'm really hungry.
Anyway, I love what Ninja Theory does. They always create very interesting narratives and gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous games to present them. So whenever Ninja Theory works on a game, I am, like, in. So when the trailer for this game started and I saw a character that looked like the Twing Twang character from Heavenly Sword, I was like, yes. And it looked amazing. It looked like this big brawl fight was going to happen. And then they were like, coming soon, news day. And I was like, I'm in. And then I didn't hear anything about the game for a while. I bookmarked the site. There was some concern over the name of the game. So there was, like, some legal things that were happening for a little bit. And I lost track of the game because, you know, other things happened. I probably was playing Destiny. When I saw it on the list... And it was listed as Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. I was like, wait, is that Hellblade? Wait, yeah, what happened with Hellblade? And so I went to go check it out. And the website is filled with all of these behind-the-scenes documentary pieces on, you know, the mocap that they did, the art that went into it, how they went back and recrafted their enemies after they got a little bit into the game, the scoring that happened. I'm like, holy shit. And I looked and I'm like, and this game comes out literally at the time that we record this podcast in
Tuesday. Years.
It is a Tuesday release. How did I miss this game that I was so, so interested in 2015, and it's because it has not been pushed.
That's right. Since, no, like, one the has legal said... name
change. It has not been pushed in North America at all. Okay, and this is a PlayStation 4 game. Sony has not pushed this game in North America in any way, shape, or form that has reached me. Like, and that's a damn shame. Because in looking at the game, they've definitely changed it from what they initially presented it to be like. And it really is about Sayuna, the lead character, who is a chick, by the way, really going through a psychosis. And, like, they worked with different clinical psychologists and doctors to make sure that they portrayed that in the right way, but it's brought on by this sense of loss, and I'm not exactly sure what that sense of loss is, but I'm like, Jesus effing Joseph. And then I look at the price of the game, and the game is $30. So I have a feeling that much like Heavenly Sword, which got a lot of its bad rep from some of the six-axis control stuff being wonky. And again, this was in the early days of the PlayStation 3 when Heavenly Sword came out, so that was to be expected. But where it really got trounced in was that the game was short. I have a feeling that Hellblade, much like Heavenly Sword, is probably going to be a short game. And I feel like that's why they priced it that way as well. So that people didn't bash it for being like, this, like, game this was only five hours, and it was $60.
Oh, so we won't have a lollipop chainsaw fiasco is what I'm hearing.
Look, we've had this conversation, and I will say it every time it comes up. If you enjoy a game, it doesn't matter what you paid for it. If you enjoyed it from the moment you put it into your system or downloaded it and hit A to start, to the moment you made it to the credits, then it's worth every penny that you paid for it. Because every penny that you paid for it helped pay all the people who put in all kinds of hours and times and sacrifice to make it. So hush your mouth, enjoy your game, and be done. So I'm probably going to pick up Hellblade this week because I really want to see what it is that Ninja Theory has done. You know, they are an independent developer, and they're like, look, we're not quite AAA, we're not quite indie, we're something else, we're independent AAA. We are going to invest ourselves in always, always bringing to the table stuff that is up to our visual standards and our gameplay standards. And I'm just like, I'm for it. Because a good story and a good experience doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be 60 hours to be good. It just has to be good to be good. So I'm going to give it a shot, and for $30... it's completely worth it. It's on PlayStation 4. Hellblade.
It's on PlayStation 4. They better pick it up.
PlayStation 4.
You said floor, bitch. You said floor.
Girl, I meant to say 4. All right? I need to drink my water. It's on PS4. It's out on Tuesday, on the 8th. It's $30, $29.99. I'm going to give it a shot because I know what Ninja Theory can do. So if nothing else, it's going to be gorgeous.
Okay.
And then Tacoma, Space Station Tacoma, like, it came out, and it's just called Tacoma now, not Space Station Tacoma now, like it was in the E3 trailer and the announcement that they had for it. But I was talking to a couple of friends of mine. I am waiting a little bit on picking this up because evidently it released so broken that you couldn't get past the start screen.
That's
on the Xbox side.
Oh, wow. That's bad.
Yeah, and they basically got to a point where, like, yeah, we know about the issue. We're working on getting a patch through the system now to fix it. One thing that you might do is unplug all of your input devices from your Xbox and then wire plug in your controller, and then it should see it, and then you could unwire control it, and then you should be able to be wireless and be fine. And my friend was like, nope. He's like, I literally unplugged every plug out of my Xbox except for my HDMI cable, and the shit didn't work. It's like, it's so broken, it's bad, and I had so many high hopes for it. So I'm going to wait a little bit on Tacoma. I'm going to give it a couple of weeks now to get some of its early bugs out, because it was another ambitious one. I put it in the ambitious, like, No Man's Sky ambitious.
Oh, which, but, I mean, I thought it was absolutely, yeah.
So I'm going to give it a little bit. I'm going to give it a little space. I'm going to let it breathe. I'm going to make it like a wine. I'm just going to open it, let it breathe for a little bit before I dive in.
You don't even drink wine.
If I can. It's not my go-to selection. Like, when I walk in a place, I'm like, let me get that Cab Sav. That's not really how I live. But if I have to choose between Bud Light,
or wine.
And wine. Oh, man. Just call me Tuscany.
Not even that. You should just be like, bitch, pick me up. I gotta go. Gotta leave. Not for
me. So I'm gonna give Hellblade a go. So you will be hearing about it from a hands-on perspective from me, either on the podcast, on the website, or both in a couple weeks, because I definitely want to get, like, into it, mm-hmm. Before I talk about it, because I want to be able to honestly be able to talk about the whole thing. I may actually pick up Agents of Mayhem, so...
Let me know how that
which
is.
Which I forgot was coming out this month.
I knew it was coming out this month, I just
for some reason, I thought it was a September game.
No. Nope. I know it's going to be August.
Anyway, that's what I got. I'm done. I'm going to put some water in my face. What do you have for the people, Panda?
All right. So, let's talk about Bara. You don't know what that is, do you?
I don't know what that
probably,
is.
You've probably heard it by another name. So Bara is a genre of media, art, games. Over here in the U.S., you probably heard yaoi.
Yes. I'm familiar with yaoi.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yaoi is a far more broader term than Bara is. So, I mean, when you think yaoi, you think, like, Bashonen boys, like, really pretty effeminate boys.
Pretty boys.
Yaoi. Kind of, you know, it's meant to interest females. But, you know, very much like, you know, the LGBTQA / www. community, there's so many different facets to men. So we shouldn't pigeonhole men. So Bara is kind of...
Are we sure that we shouldn't do that? Oh, yeah, we're sure.
No. So the thing about Bara is very much man love, boy love, but it's not... But we're not hyper... there's no hyperization.
No, this is not...
Wait. We're not overly hyperizing the pretty boy, Bashonen aspect to men. So Bara is very more... probably if you had to attribute it to any type of classification that we have here, very much like the bear community, like the big, strong, burly type of man. So burly man to burly man ratio, sort of.
But it's all man to man, not man boy, because that's
right.
Not cool.
No, men to men.
Okay. Because you said man, boy, and I was like,
well, no,
because
there are a lot of animes where, like, the female character is like, I'm totally into BL, and that's, like, boy love, because, like, she's a young girl, like, she's a teenager, so she's looking at teenage boys. So, like, it really depends on the perception of who. So, Bara is more like man love, so, like, adult men for adult men, and not women looking at men. So, like, the expectation of attractiveness is different.
Okay.
Like, what women like to look at men who like men is different in some regards to what a man looking at another man might find. Like, it's different, same pickle, different consistency, different, like, whatever. But
it's a pickle.
I'm still trying to learn more about it, because I stumbled across a Let's Player, because I'm really obsessed with this game called The Letter, which I just bought and I'm going to play myself because it's really intricate. The person I'm watching, Manly Badass Hero, he just released a newer chapter, I think, later today. And he does a much more thorough walkthrough in his Let's Plays. Like, if a game has multiple endings or routes, he will play the game throughout its entirety with all of those. So you get a really fulfilled experience watching him do a Let's Play of these, you know, visual novels, where most people are just trying to get, like, trying to gold path it once, and they're done. But I was kind of in the mood. I'm like, man, I really wish he could crank these out faster, but I understand he can't. But I kind of want to know what happens in this game. So I found another Let's Player who was a little further along in her story. And that is Husbando Goddess, who is like 19 and very, very enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the energy that she involves. I wish she could read better. Yeah, there's a couple of stumbles there, which you're like, you could have edited that out. Like, you could have fixed that, but you're young, and you're doing you, And, like, I've been dumb and say things wrong all the time, especially on this show. So, like, I can't knock her for that, because if I do, I gotta knock myself for it. And I'm kind of vain and I don't want to do that. So I'm not. But she's further along in her game, and I resonate with that, so I've been watching her. And she played this game called Let's Meet Adam, which is one of this Bara series, this genre that I'm talking about, which, one, I didn't even realize was a thing. And I feel like I should do better about remembering that there are multifacets to every, like, there's facets to every stone, there's a facet to every gem. So, I mean, I don't know why I wouldn't think that this could be a genre that existed ever. So I'm kind of glad that she opened that pathway for me to, like, see it and experience what that could potentially be. Because I'm sure some people would have a different idea of what a Bara game could be. Like, it'd be like an H game or a harem or a... And it could be so much more than that. And that's what Let's Meet Adam is. It's a...
Now, when you say Bara, how do you spell that? Is it single R, double R?
One R. So it's B-A-R-A. Bara.
Oh, okay.
Just think and man love.
Okay.
Just Bara, think man love.
Bara. Man love.
Man love.
And the game that we're talking about, or you're about to talk about,
is Let's Meet Adam. And it's okay. Really funny that you asked for the spelling of that, because I want you guys to be aware that the meet in Let's Meet Adam is not M-E-E-T, it's M-E-A-T.
Oh, Lord.
Already at the point, I'm like, are we
drinking more than just water right now.
And I was just like, are we going to get saucy? I mean, granted, this is Bara, so probably.
Did you mean sausage?
Absolute. Whatever floats your boat, bro.
So I'm just going to say that probably at this point in the podcast, if you have young children listening,
maybe they
should.
You want
to stop it?
You may.
This is probably the point.
Not for them.
The rest of this show, enough for them.
I'm probably going to try to.
Don't lie.
I'm not going to get too graphic here. Because the
but it does.
It, there's the game. The game, yeah, absolutely, so does.
Just hey, don't, hey, don't let
hey,
your.
Bro, if, hey, bro. You've seen and or played Hoonie Pop, right?
Yes.
So you know how you can.
But I did play Hoonie Cam Studio. So
okay, that's good. That's good. I'll clap for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so sometimes you'll see some stuff in Let's Meet Adam, depending on the route that you're on. Mm-hmm. Literally. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so in Let's Meet Adam, you, the player, are playing Adam. And he is a young, up-and-coming Nowgram,
sure,
which I guess is like Instagram celebrity. Like, so much so, like, he's got like 2 million followers and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so much so that, you know, he had to leave the East Coast to go to L.A. to become like an actor, model, waiter.
Because that's
like,
what you do. When you break out big, you roll to L.A.
L.A.
Because YouTube's out there.
So he has moved to L.A. He's been there for about, I think he says in the game, about 6 months. He has a roommate named Vince, who literally looks like a really hot, rustic cowboy. Like, these are very attractive men. Sprites that they've animated. And there is this escape room that is really big in West Hollywood. And, like, it's invite only. You can't just show up. You have to be put on this wait list. And, like, the night of your escape room, they tell you where to go. And it's, like, the hottest thing. Like, it is the hottest thing right now in this universe. And Vince and Adam get selected for the same one. So they're like, this is really weird because they draw this at random, like the odds of this. And like already at that point, I'm like, this ain't random. You being targeted. Like, you need to be more aware of shit. Okay? Mm-hmm. Like, already the hair.
Be aware of your surroundings and environments.
It's like if everyone's saying, oh man, I've been on this list for a year and I still haven't been selected. Clearly, they are truly random. Like, the level of randomness in selection kind of reminds me of Extreme Haunts, which I've talked about, I think, a few years ago, where, like, literally people would be on wait lists for years, and when they got selected, like, they would need to know where the person was, and a white van would show up and just abduct people for these Extreme Haunts. But it's kind of like that. But anyway, they get selected for this Thursday night game, and they show up to, you know, Escape Mansion WeHo, which is short for West Hollywood. And each escape room has 9 participants. Like, that is the number of people. So when the protagonist, you and your buddy, show up, there are already 3 other people in the room. So there's now 5 of you. No, sorry. There's 4 in the room when you get there. So you are 5 and 6. So you're waiting for the last three people to show up. And, like, these are all very different types of men that you'll encounter in the community. So you have, like, your daddies, and you have your bears, and you have, like, your flamboyant, and then you have, like, your just kind of came out and still figuring themselves out, and then you have your beautiful, unique butterfly. Like, I'm really glad of how they definitely got all... They did a really great sampling of what the culture is. And the lifestyle is, and the life is, because sometimes you can get pigeonholed into, they all look like this, they all sound like this, they all do this, and, like, you can get those blinders on. Like, I know I have, I assume everyone has encountered that level of narrow-mindedness. Like, we've been there, and it's, you know, it's not bad, but you should definitely work your way out of it if you can. They find out that one of the people in their group has done one of these escape rooms before, so, like, the team at this point is not really trusting of this person, because it's supposed to be very random. No experience is ever the same, but we have someone who's been in here before, and it doesn't seem fair. So once again, my red flags. I'm like, yeah, someone's got set up. Something gonna go down. Someone's gonna hurt somebody. Like, this is no joke. Like, get out. Like, get out. and my husband's watching me watch this, and he's like, you could just play this. I'm like, no, I can't. Because something really bad's gonna happen, and it hasn't happened yet, but it's gonna. I'm like, I've played Danganronpa. I know what happens when you think things are random. They ain't, okay? Like, they're not. One of the very last people to show up is, like, this guy who literally looks like Thor. Like, they made Lars look like Thor, and he's, like, super hot, and he's like, he's an actor, and oh my god. And of course, Adam, being, like, a rising actor, wants to get close to Lars and, like, kind of use his popularity, and he's kind of using, like, his hotness to, like, try to get in, but it's not really working. And, like, people are kind of miffed at that, but then some of them are really blatantly trying to be best friends with Lars, like, in a very personal way, right away. So, like, the tension is palpable. And this is a visual novel, so there's not a lot of animation or movement, but, like, the dialogue is very suggestive and strong, and even I was like, ooh, that's too hot for moms. Too hot for moms. Too hot. Not that I'm a mom, but, yeah. And I'm like, damn, I'm glad I'm watching this at 9 in the morning and not at, like, 5:30. Like, I was being smart. But anyway, when all nine of the players kind of get there, then the game begins. And this eerie voice, because the great thing about visual novels is you should definitely play them with headphones, because you need to be immersed in what's happening as the character. And you hear this voice, and it's just like, yeah, so you guys thought that this was just like an escape room, and it totally is, but we've got some special rules here. Like, for one, we're going to give you 9 hours to escape this, you know, escape room. And if you've done escape rooms in real life, like, you're maybe in 2 or 3 rooms, and they usually only give you, like, an hour. Because, you know, they have to circulate people out. So I'm like, 9 hours? Like, how many rooms is this? And it's literally like a fucking compound, which you find out later. They're like, this is like an underground bunker of, like, terror. So they're like, yeah, so this isn't your ordinary escape room. You have 9 hours. So the structure is literally like hallway, 2 puzzle rooms, and each of the puzzle rooms has a death trap. So if you don't solve the puzzle right, somebody could die. And, like, they don't believe that this is really happening. Like, they think that this is still part of the act at this point. And everybody gets labeled a certain thing. So if you're familiar with the community or not, you know, there are some who are ooks and some who are semis. And I'm using those terms.
No.
You don't. T and Bs.
Okay. All right. Got it.
And Vs. Got it? You know what Vs are?
No.
I don't.
Don't explain. Just keep going.
Versatile.
Just keep going.
Flexible.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Got it?
Got it. Got
okay.
it. Got it.
So the way that the puzzle rooms work is that no 2 T's can go in, no 2 B's can go in. It has to be a T and a B, or a B and a V. Okay? And there's only 1 V in the group of 9.
This is starting to already sound like my cognitive linguistics class that I took.
Possibly.
That is no fun.
Wait. I need to explain this.
Because we had to do that stupid puzzle where you had to get wolves and sheeps in the number across the thing without overwhelming.
You couldn't put 2 sheeps on. You couldn't put a sheep in a wolf. Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that scenario. But you find out there's only 1 V. So, like, you're like, wait a minute, but there's 9. And if there's, like... if there's like four doors, then there's like one person out that doesn't work. And like one of the characters brings that up. They're like, kind of glad that you brought that up because we're going to demonstrate one of these death traps. And they actually kill the movie star that I told you that they were all kind of really excited about was participating. So they made the Hollywood guy the example. And like everyone's like, oh my God, what? Like, and that's where, like, the tilt kind of happens when you realize that this is no joke. Like, this is not an escape room. This is a death game, which I really do like, death game animes. Because, one, you've got that element of who's doing it, why. You get all the tension and suspense, and most death horror games don't actually show you exactly what happened. So, like, they leave it to your imagination. Literally, you find out in this game that Adam, your character, is the V. And at the beginning, I was like, okay, Adam's totally being targeted. And then the game kind of plays you against your expectation for a while. And, like, nothing really ever happens to Adam. Like, Adam's pretty smart. Like, he starts realizing that maybe he's been a vapid bitch, like, this whole time. And maybe he should be a better person and be nicer to people. And it's not really about fame, but it's the good that you do with your fame if you have it. So, like, there's this big, deep message in this game that they just put behind really gorgeous subsets of men. By the end of it, because there are three endings to it. There's a perfect ending, there's a very bad ending, and then there's the, well, you made it ending. Good for you, I guess, maybe.
Okay.
Type of ending. And literally the worst ending is everybody dies, plus you. And at the end, like, if you happen to die, like, whoever kills you is like, nice to meet you, Adam. And, like, it's really kind of a play on the words a little bit. And the really good ending is you figure out who the killer is because there's somebody targeting you or somebody's targeting you, depending on what happens in your scenarios. And you have to kind of figure out why they're targeting you and whether or not you can appeal to the humanity they may or may not still have by the point that you encounter them. You can narrowly escape. You can escape with your potential love interest, or you could get murdered to high heaven. But the message is really palpable because, not to spoil too much, but literally there are people in your game who feel ostracized in their community because they don't adhere to a certain aesthetic standard, and they feel that Adam represents the pinnacle of what all gay, straight should appear and look like and be, and they want to crush that stereotype. Granted, they're doing it the wrong way, clearly by murdering people. They learn to realize that not all swans quack the same. I don't think, do swans quack? I think they quack.
I thought they honked.
So, not all swans honk that way. So, like, it's this great, you know, it's kind of this big analogy for, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, you know, mm-hmm. Type of deal. And, like, that's not what I was expecting this game to do. And it absolutely does it and uses a subset of circumstances and people that I encounter every day and have never really ever thought to put in this situation. So, like, it was a really big refresher to me because, I mean, my visual novels all kind of sit in the same kind of, oh, girl goes into a haunted house and shit gets crazy. Or, you know, lots of murders have been happening in this hotel and I have to survive until, like, morning. Like, that type of deal. And, like, they never really go into a lot of the personal backstories of the other people who are there. And I love that we are expanding that some. And we're getting stories that people can, you know, they can see themselves in and they can relate to them and all of that. And it was a really great experience. And I hoped other Bara and whatever the equivalent scent for, you know, Lady Love is, that they have games like this out here because I think it's really interesting. If you're old enough and curious, you can buy Let's Meet Adam. You can pay whatever you can because it's practically free if you can't afford to. But they just wanted to get it out there and send the message and, you know, subvert our expectations of what visual novels can be about and do. I'm very thankful for Husbando Goddess for opening me up to this new genre that I now want to experience a little bit more of. And I'm glad that it wasn't just about how many dudes I can be friends with in an evening. you know? Like, that was nice. It was nice to not make that the focal point of the game.
Right.
At all. So,
but, like, because, I mean, typically that's what those games
right, like, they kind of set you up to be, like, you know, you're, like,
a manhole.
You're the trophy, and everybody wants to be super best friends with you, but you can only be super best friends with one, or, like, two, if you're really good at hiding shit. And I'm really glad that wasn't the focal point of the game. It was there. There was aspects to it, but clearly in a death game, the last thing you should be worrying about is who's your friend. Who's your super best friend? Because, you know, at the end, your super best friend could actually not be your friend. It could actually be a murderer.
Right.
Like, it could happen.
Ready to murder just you.
Right, because of something you said or did or didn't do, as the case may or may not be. But that was a really interesting experience that I got to have. And then lastly, I was going to talk about Splatoon 2 because I played a little bit more of that, but I'm not going to because I want to talk Castlevania because I finally watched Castlevania.
Yay!
On Netflix. We finally did it. And so I don't want to talk about the story because, one, I'm really pissed about where they left it after the fourth and only episode because I'm like, you've now set us up for a great freaking series that you're not going to possibly give us right away. I just want to talk about how Castlevania, you know, was a game.
Castlevania is many games.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, they took a game. Like, sometimes when you get animes that come off from games, sometimes there's something seriously lost in translation. And I think the great thing about, like, games from the past, like Castlevania, which I think was back in, like, 89, I think?
Castlevania predates that, but that's okay. Go ahead.
No. The television series was based off of Castlevania 3, which was in 1989. So the original Castlevania was...
I thought you were like, Castlevania started in 89. I was like, no.
But the series, the Netflix series, is based off of Castlevania 3.
Yes.
So if you know anything about Castlevania, then you know where we're kind of sitting in this. I played...
But if you don't know about Castlevania, what should you know about Castlevania?
So, hey, Dracula, he's like the king of vampires and minions, and you don't fuck with Dracula because then he'll fuck your shit. But then there's this family of the Belmonts who are like, hey, we're like a family that, like, delves in black magic, and we're gonna fight you. And then the common people are like, yeah, we want you to fight them, but, you know, black magic's really bad, so, like, we're still not gonna be cool with you, but you should probably still do what you're doing. But then the Belmonts are like, what? And then, like, Dracula's like, what? And then there's, like, fighting. And then other stuff.
This is why we need to do a video podcast.
It's like, what? No. Like, but that's the premise.
And then Dracula was like, not today.
Exactly. And that's kind of what happens in these four episodes of Castlevania. So Dracula, you know, Tepes is up in his, like, castle, not bothering anybody, kind of like a Hikamori, kind of like Howl's Moving Castle, because he's kind of hot, but kind of separated from, like, normal people. And Lisa from Lampoopoo, which, what a horrible name of a city to be from, you know, is a doctor, and she wants knowledge. So Lisa shows up and gets into his castle, which is not an easy feat. Like, you don't just walk up to Dracula's castle, okay? Clearly, Castlevania 1, 2, 3.
One does not simply walk into Dracula's
castle. You don't. Clearly, you don't. So, like, clearly she's, you know, she's skilled enough in fighting and, like, can survive. And she manages to get into his castle. And, like, he's all like, someone broke into my house. This never happens. And, like, she's like, look, I'm a doctor. I want to cure people. And I don't want to just, like, hang dead carcasses from people. Like, I'm not a shaman. Like, I believe in science. I believe in healing people. And I want to do this. And I've been told that the man who lives in this house has knowledge. And I want his secret knowledge. And at this point, like, he's, like, creeping up on her. And he's, like, all up on her neck. And it's, like, kind of sexual. And I'm like, oh, he could bite you right
because
now.
Because he's Dracula, Dracula is always sexual.
Right, exactly. But, like, all of a sudden, like, she's like, you know, I've walked into your house and you haven't offered me a single drink or a cracker or to take my robe. And, like, he's, like, really surprised by how open and abrasive in communication that she is. And, like, he's humored and he's intrigued by her. So he's like, look, he's like, you do this thing for me. And you teach me more about humanity, and I will, one, not kill you, and two, will give you some wisdom of stuff that I know. So, like, they fall in love, there's, like, a montage, you see them kind of, like, have a kismet, like, in a movie where you're like, oh, they kind of love each other now. And then all of a sudden...
And I'm totally pulling for them, even though I know that one of them is Dracula.
Right. Because I'm like, oh, he might betray her and eat her, but we may not see that. But it doesn't happen. And Lisa ends up convincing Dracula to travel the world as a man. Like, she's like, if you love me as a woman, you should live as my man, like a man. So, like, he stops using his powers, and she's like, you should travel the world, walk on your feet. Because, like, he's kind of hovering and shit. Like, he's just so used to, you know, being Dracula. And he, like, stops using his powers, and he goes on a walking journey, and he leaves. And, like, this is several years after the initial porking, because at this point, you realize that Lisa has had a kid. We're getting to him later. While, you know, Dracula is, you know, finding himself in the world, this fucking bishop in Wakalia... Or I'm not saying the name of the town right, so I'm just going to call it Boston. So the bishop in Boston is all like, hey, I found some scrolls in your house, Lisa. I think you a witch because you got shit in tubes. And she's like, no, it's science. I go to MIT. It's what I do. And he's like, nah, I got to kill you because you're inviting devil stuff into here. And he straights up, puts her on a stake and burns her alive.
And in front of a shit ton of people.
A shit ton. And, like, as she's burning, she's looking to the sky, and she's like, please do not be mad at them. They don't understand what they do. And, like, you know, people are like, why? Who is she calling out to? And, like, the bishop's like, she's talking to the devil. And I'm like, nah, she talking to Dracula, because as soon as Dracula finds out what you have
done, motherfuckers,
you are dead. And sure enough, as this is happening, Dracula is walking back towards their house, which has been burnt down. And there's this old lady crying in front of it. And he's like, what happened here? Is my wife okay? And she's like, the bishop took her 3 hours ago and has charged her with witchcraft. And he's like, so are they keeping her in a prison? She goes, no, they put her on a stake about like 40 minutes ago. So she's probably dead. And like his face just drops. And he's like, I have lived as a man for this many years to understand you people that my wife has loved so much. And like this old lady had nothing to do with anything. And she's sitting there mourning this woman because I guess she was sick. And Lisa like cured her with science. And he's like, I can't believe that you guys have killed the single thing that has kept me from killing you. And then he gets really mad. And like he kind of pushes the old lady and like burns her flowers. And he's like, since you knew my wife, he's like, I'm going to give you an additional day. But you have a year from tomorrow to leave here. Because in a year, whoever humanity that's still here, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you all. So, like, she runs off, this old lady, because he's, you know, she's not the culprit. But then he starts, you know, he turns himself into flames and, like, rushes to the town square. And as he, like, kind of shows up, all that's left is, like, the charred remains of Lisa on this stake. And, like, all the people around are, like, dancing and celebrating because they got rid of the witch. And then all of a sudden he comes through the flames and he's like, you've burned the last thing that has kept you safe. And, like, everyone's like, all the peasants are like, oh, fucking shit. Did we fuck up? We fucked up.
And there's a dude in the back like, yeah, I told you.
No, like, there was one.
She wasn't a witch.
Right, she was just a doctor. And, like, it's funny, because as I'm watching this, because I'm watching this with my husband and two other friends, and I'm like, you see, guys, this is why women don't go into STEM research, because we get accused of witchcraft. And
you did not.
I did. I was like, this is why women don't go into science, because men say it's magic, and then they kill us. And everyone laughed, but then we stopped laughing, because it is kind of sort of true.
Use a dick.
But anyway, so yeah, so at this point, Dracula tells everybody in Wakalia, is like, look, you have a year. I understand mortgages are rough. It's hard to move about. I've been living as a human for like a few years. Walking is slow. I'm giving you a year to get out of here. Because if you don't, I'm summoning all the demon armies and I am fucking your shit because you fucked my shit. And then he disappears. And the bishop's like, we're being tested by the devil. Stand your ground. We're not moving. And then a day after a year, they're celebrating. On the day that they killed Lisa Tempest, they're having, like, a city party.
Yeah, because they're like, oh yeah, see, nothing happened.
Because it was a day after the year. And the Archbishop, like, shows up, which, you know, Archbishop doesn't usually move unless there's a call for celebration. And because they thought that this town had been tested and they had passed it, God's will and all that, he came to celebrate. And he's like, yeah, we burned that witch bitch a year ago, and it's like a year and a day, and did anything happen to us? No. And as he's talking, the sky gets dark. And I'm like, ooh, he told that woman a year from. So I'm like, it's a year today, bitch. You clearly were not listening.
Right.
To Dracula.
You did not pay attention to your calendar.
You did not. Mm. And like, and then the sky gets dark and then it starts raining blood. And then like these half-formed bats start falling from the sky. And then Dracula's like, I gave you a year. And what did you do? You decided to throw a party. And it's like, it's that level of like maniac, like mental break where like he's not yelling, he's not mad. It's like that simmer where you know that break has happened, like that psychotic break has already happened. So he's just like, you really would do that after I was being so generous? And like all the women are like, aw, shit, and they're holding their babies. And he's like, I told you. I gave you a chance, and this is what you've done. And then all of a sudden, all these flying monkey demons start descending from the sky, and very much like the first episode of Titan, of Attack on Titans, like, people's heads are being eaten off, and skin's being peeled. There are some weird dog demons that are literally, like, eating babies. Like, you're literally seeing babies being snatched from their moms and devoured. Like, it is not a...
He told them!
He did. And then the Archbishop, who's like this big fat blob of a man who can't even really walk, like is sitting there, and Dracula shows up before him and he's like, and you're the worst of them all. He's like encouraging them, telling them that their God loves them. And he's like, your God doesn't love you because you've done the ultimate wrong. And then it flashes to several years later. So Wakalia has been completely decimated. There are human heads on pikes everywhere. Like there are no humans living in Wakalia. And you see that we see another neighboring town, because after Wakali has been decimated, you know, Dracula's like, I'm still not done. My rage against humanity is not done. So my demon hordes will now go to all the fellow cities with humanity in them and completely wipe them out. And this is where, for me, I didn't get it. Like, I understand, okay, like, to make a series, like, you have to expand and all of that. But I'm like, all right, so Wakalia, this one city, all those people, they fucked up. They did. They deserve exactly what they got. But it's not like they paraded Lisa's city, her, like, decimated body through the other cities and other people pissed on it. Like, it was this isolated incident. He went there, he got that. That could have been it. But that's not what Dracula does, because he mad.
Right. Well, you gotta remember that before Lisa... sad. He was going to wipe out all of humanity.
Right.
But then anyway, she gave him the glimmer spark of hope that maybe not all humans.
Right. And then they definitely were like, not all. And that's really funny because so Alucard, or he goes by Adrian something Tempes. He's like,
but some people call him Alucard. He announces who he is when they reach him at the bottom of the table.
But anyway, so you see a glimmer of him right before Dracula like is starting to summon his demon horde, and he's like, Dad, how about we just take out the ones who did it? We don't have to fuck with all of humanity, because, you know, I'm not exactly all vampire here. Like, I got some humanity here. And he's like, either you're with me or you're not. And he's like, I'm not. And, like, they kind of fight, and he takes a devastating blow from Dracula trying to defend humanity. So he's been, like, resting underneath this town for, like, a year or so, waiting for this prophecy that was told, that Alucard would meet a hunter and a scholar, or I think could also be translated as magician. Mm-hmm. And with their help, they would be able to defeat Dracula. And this is where we finally, and I think this is by end of episode 2 and episode 3, we have now met Trevor Belmont. So there are royal families, like there are honored families, and the Belmonts were one of these royal families, but they did stuff with black magic and the paranormal, and you know, when you're different, everybody hates you. So they're like, now we gotta excommunicate you, and we need to exile you, because your black magic is what's attracting all the demons that are ripping our faces, and it's not just because, you know, we burnt an innocent woman because we were scared. Like, I love how they like to pass the blame. But Trevor is the only living son of the Belmont family. And he's kind of, you know, he's wearing all the crest stuff, but he hides it under stuff because he doesn't want people to know, because, like, they start shit with him whenever he shows up. And he's just in this bar drinking, just trying to get through. Like, he ain't trying to stay. He's not trying to get involved. He's kind of like the Mad Max of the Castlevania universe to me. And they made Trevor like a fucking player. Like, he's kind of sassy, he's kind of cheeky, but he's kind of a Byronic hero. So, like, if he happens to, like, overhear, like, some dudes, or I shouldn't say dudes, some priests about to hit this old elder because he wants to help these dying people, and, like, they brandish knives, and, you know, priests should not be carrying like that. The only piece they should be carrying is a Bible and not, like, knives and shit.
And the only piece they should be carrying is that of the Lord.
Exactly, and that's clearly not what they're doing. And he's like, I really shouldn't get involved, but, like, this old man's just like, I'm just here to heal because all of your doctors have left. Like, this guy's not trying, like, he's not stealing shit. He's literally trying to help your people who you've refused to remove because you know these demon hordes are coming to get you, all of you. You know, but Trevor will do the right thing in the absence of, but only so much. He will only help so much. He doesn't want to get truly involved because he himself has been outcast and pushed out, and he will only do so much. And through the episodes, like, you see him, like, slowly coming to terms with the fact that, you know, the Belmonts, even though they were exiled, still continue to do, because that was in their blood. It was their duty to do. And he's been kind of running away from that. So you see him kind of accept that this is his role and, like, this is his mission. And he ends up meeting a seeker, speaker, mage, who you think is a boy, but she's actually a hot girl with a sassy accent. They kind of have, like, a weird brother-sister banter for a while that also could also possibly be, like, them becoming super best friends, but you don't know. And she's like, no.
Super best friends.
But, like, she's like, there's a soldier, and I think I found the catacombs that he's in, and then they fall through, like, four levels of catacombs, because if you've ever played the games, you're constantly in catacombs.
Yep.
Until you find a boss. And sure enough, like, they fall down four levels, and then they find a boss, and it's Alucard. And she's like, we found the sleeping soldier. And, like, Trevor's like, nah, that's not your messiah. He's got fangs. And he's, and, you know, Alucard's super freaking cool in this whole freaking battle. It's like, the last big battle in episode four. And he's just like, so are you a hunter? Because I thought I saw the Belmont crest on you. And he's like, I'm the last thing you'll ever see. And he's like, are you sure about that? I don't even think you could take me if you're just playing with those toys. And he's like, oh, come at me, bro. And then they kind of come at each other, but it's also kind of sexually charged a little bit. And the speaker's just kind of watching this happen from, like, the background, because, like, you don't fuck with that shit. And by the end of it, they finally realize that they have the same goal. And that's when, you know, Alucard's like, so speaker, you're like a living library. Do you know the rest of that prophecy of, like, the sleeping soldier? And she's like, yeah, but it's roughly translated that the hero would meet a scholar and a hunter. And he goes, he would meet a magician, a sorcerer mage, and a demon hunter. And I have now met you two. So we're ready to go now. And he puts on his clothes, which are very reminiscent to his clothes in the game. And they're like, we gotta go kill my dad. And then it cuts out like that. And I'm like, damn it. I was literally like, you've set me up. I'm completely engaged. All you need is a healer in your group, which I'm sure Safa or Safia, whatever her name is, can actually do. And I need Netflix to make this a full-fledged series. Like, I need to see this happen. Like, it has to happen.
There's going to be more Castlevania. They've already said it is.
I would say that my only detraction in this whole entire series is that some of the mouth flaps don't work for the English sub, and I found out why. I think when they initially made this, they did this in German.
Mm-hmm.
Because my husband speaks some German. He's like, I want to see what type of German they use. So we watched the first episode in German, and the mouth flaps synced up perfectly. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, and it sounded more palpable, and there was much more intention and inflection. And so, like, if you know
German, everything's much more scarier in German.
Like, it just feels more real. Like, I kind of now want to watch Helsing in German, because I feel like Integra Helsing would sound so
oh,
much
she's better. Badass.
She'd
she's
be badass. Even more it, badass yeah. In German.
If you can watch Helsing Ultimate in German,
like, you should get a slow clap for the
it's
rest of your life.
Freaky.
I feel like we finally had someone take a nostalgic game that already had a lot of story, and, like, they didn't fuck it up. They stayed pretty close to the source material.
Yeah, it's a good job.
And it felt authentic. And that's what I liked about it. Because, you know, we've had Sonic, The Adventures of Sonic. We've had two versions of that. And I like the second one. I like the second version better than the first, but it's not true.
I just threw up a little bit in my own mouth.
What? I like Jaleel White as Sonic in both versions, because he was in both. But, like, and you have your Super Mario Super Show, and, like, they just didn't know what to do with the game. Because, you know, these were simple-ish games. There wasn't much going on. So there's a lot left to the imagination. And I feel like they could have completely flatlined Castlevania and made this a simple, we gotta go kill the bad guy. But they made... The bad guy wasn't bad at first. Something else made... Once again, we're dealing with the why. And we got the why at the start. So now you're like, okay. Like,
now I can go on the journey
and
through the why.
Mm-hmm. Through the why. And it's so important. Of all the W words, I feel like the why is the thing. It's like, oh man, now I could completely believe in what's going on. Like, that's what it is.
No, they really did a good job.
I agree with you completely. So... watch it on Netflix. Like, I'm really upset that I did not watch this when it first came out, because the two friends who came over were like, we want to watch it with you. And I was like, sure. And then life happened, and I'm like, I'm about to cheat on these guys and just watch it and not tell them I watched it. But then I'll want to talk about it.
You can cheat on your friends.
No, you cannot.
Just don't shit on your friends. Unless you're going to play shit on your friends.
But yeah, anyway, it's on Netflix. There's only 4 episodes. I think it started streaming on the 7th. You could get through it in an afternoon, which is what we absolutely did. Try not to MS3K it. Like I said, there were several times where I kept throwing in one-liners. And I mean, I thought it was funny, and the people I was with thought it was funny. But I imagine if you were going to, like, watch this with a big group, somebody's going to be like, I am trying to preserve the integrity of the scene, please. Like, I feel like people would get really defensive about this because of the quality of it. Tread carefully. But please watch this. Please support Castlevania.
All right. Well, there you have it. I'm going to wrap it up for this episode, because we've done a lot of talking. If you enjoyed our podcast this week, then make sure that you subscribe by going to iTunes, either on your desktop or on your mobile device through the podcast application, and subscribe to the Eshcast to ensure that you get our brand new episodes every week when we put them out. You can also visit our website, electricsisterhood.com. Bookmark the site for sure, so you can keep up with all of our news and reviews. You can grab our feeds there, including the direct feed for the podcast, or just listen to it on the web if you're so inclined, right there on the site, electricsisterhood.com, as well as check out all the great stuff that the entire team is writing and reviewing on a weekly basis. If you enjoy what we're doing, make sure that you catch us on all the places that we're at. You can get the podcast on Stitcher Radio, on Google Play. You can find it at VogNetwork.com, as well as some other really fantastic, amazing shows to be listening to. Definitely make sure that if you like what you're seeing on ElectricSisterhood.com, that you check out the sites and shows of all of the folks that make up the Land of Esh. I'm talking KBD over at B3Crew.com with the No Borders, No Race podcast every week, spinning new stuff that you definitely want to hear and should hear from all angles of indie everything, including anime, manga, games, entertainment, you name it. KBD's on it, as well as the crew over at B3Crew.com. On Wednesday nights, our homie Hamsterman2049 is streaming on Twitch, new games and old games at 9 Eastern. Make sure that you check him out. You can find the link on our Facebook page. You'll always find it at smashrook.com, as well as on our social. So definitely make sure that you check out his streams and be part of chat. It is a fantastically fun little adventure every Wednesday at 9 Eastern. Keeping it going, getting you through the rest of the week. If you love TV show recap shows, then you will love Phil's recap and review. Oh my god, I'm rewatching his Westworld recaps right now, and I am enjoying it so much. Make sure you check him out on YouTube, Phil's Recap and Review. You can check out the site, issuesprogram.com, and keep up with all the stuff that Phil is up to. Some really great reviews. And really just a whole lot of fun. Be part of chat, call in live, be part of the show. It's amazing. Last, but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, giving you and covering all the stuff that nerds crave, from comic books to anime, manga, games, and more. If it's nerdy, they are talking about it, covering it, and all over it over at nerdcrave.com. So make sure that you're part of that. Hit us up on our social and let us know if there's something that you'd like us to review or that you want our opinion on or you'd like to see us play, because we're about to start streaming and we've got some fun things lined up for you guys over the next couple of months. So hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/landofesh. You can hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at ESH News, and just let us know if there's something you want us to play, review. There's a show coming up you think we should go to. We might not be able to do it, but we'll definitely give it a thought. And if we end up covering the thing that you recommend, we'll give you a shout out in the show. So that's all I've got. That's the business. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be back next week. As always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Titties.